The only announcement I have is 4 weeks from now, about 4 weeks, is a Feast of Tabernacles. It's coming fast. I was thinking this week, we normally always, it's the end of September, October, and I think we know it's 4 weeks away, but I don't know if it's hit us yet. So anyway, just keep that in the back of our mind and prepare for that. I'm sure we have a lot to do in preparation for the feast. And with all that, if I can call forth Elder Allen for today's message. Elder Allen.
Greetings, everyone. It used to be that jokes about used car salesmen were plentiful and rather funny, but they're not so funny anymore. Seems like we have many used car salesmen around today, and they're not just selling cars. Just about everywhere you look today, it's clear that we're in a crisis of honesty in our culture. Used to be that one's word was one's bond. You shook your hand, the deal was sealed. This was directly, I believe, related to the fact that we were once a Bible-believing, Bible-professing people who took their faith seriously. At least a lot more seriously than people do today. People, for the most part, could be trusted to do what they said because they were instilled with not just a love for Yahweh's word, but a fear of Yahweh. And they taught their children principles of truth that we find in Yahweh's word. We don't see much of that anymore today. Religion has become entertainment. The Bible has become ignored. And the results are everywhere around us. We're all well aware that things have changed. The contrast should just scream out to everyone that the Bible is what it says it is. The Bible is a right key to happy and prosperous living, and without it, you have just the opposite. You have chaos. You have people don't keep their word. Recent polls have consistently shown that people do not really expect their elected officials to carry out their campaign promises. Those promises are made merely to get elected. And that explains why the leaders that we elect fail to meet our expectations for such things as integrity and reliability, and why those leaders lack the commitment to accept responsibility for running a trustworthy government. Just as the Bible says, as goes the leadership, so go the people. This problem with the political system is symptomatic of a greater breakdown, I think, of society values. We see corporate scandals all over the place, big, huge, billion-dollar scandals. We see heinous crimes being committed. We see increasingly more and more dysfunctional families. We see all around us the results that occur when people have little concern for integrity. A man named Stuart Briscoe tells of being hired by a bank. He was young, he was new, and just learning the business. One day his boss told him, "If Mr. Anderson calls, just tell him I'm out." Briscoe replied, "Oh, are you planning to go somewhere?" "No, I just don't want to speak to him. So tell him I'm out." "Well, let me make sure I understand. You mean you want me to lie for you?" Well, the boss blew up. He was angered at being questioned by his young employee. Briscoe prayed and was given a flash of insight. He told him, "You should be happy, because if I won't lie for you, isn't it safe to assume that I won't lie to you?" Like a highway, you know, lack of honesty goes both ways. During his time as a rancher, Theodore Roosevelt and one of his cowpunchers was lassoing a maverick steer. They got him, lit a fire, and prepared to brand him. The part of the range that they were on was claimed by a Gregor Lang, one of Roosevelt's neighbors. According to the cattleman's rule, if that animal was on another man's property, the animal became the property of that man. Well, therefore, the steer belonged to Lang. As his cowboy applied the brand, Roosevelt said, "Wait, that should be Lang's brand." "That's all right, boss," said the cowboy. "But you're putting on my brand," Roosevelt said. "That's right," said the man. "Drop that iron," Roosevelt demanded. Get back to the ranch and get out. I don't need you anymore. A man who will steal for me will also steal from me. Integrity. Do we display it in our lives? As the Bible shows us, we are to live by a certain code, day in, day out. As biblical ethics are increasingly cast aside, we see more and more hypocrisy and outright dishonesty in our world, and we become almost used to it. We live in a world of deceit and falsehood in advertising, in politics, personal relationships, business. We've all been deceived and we've all been defrauded at one time or another, and it happens every day. You buy a defective product, you expect that product to work. Companies expect to turn up a certain amount of defective products. You're not told about that. You're not made aware of hidden charges that you find on your bill. Good night. Look at your telephone bill sometime and see all the hidden charges and taxes, and it's just amazing. You're paying more for all of that than you are for the telephone service. You're not made aware of that. You just have to look at the fine print. Why do we have fine print? Shouldn't have to have fine print, but we do, because there's deception. People don't want you to see. We've all been deceived. Promises are made but not fulfilled. A friend turns out to be not such a friend after all. The list is long and we all know it too well. One of the worst situations is to pretend to have a devotion to Yahweh, but a heart that belies the truth. When selfish acts and evil habits secretly lurk in your heart, you've got problems. It's been said that the true measure of an individual is what he does when no one's looking. Honesty and integrity go together. The honest person will be above board in everything that he does, in every situation, in every circumstance. The honest person will live according to Scripture. In John chapter 1, Yahshua described a man named Nathanael as an Israelite in whom there was no guile. What did he mean by that? Well, the Greek for guile is dolos, and it means crafty deceit, falsehood. It is related to the word for decoy, a device used to trick. Now, Yahshua was talking about an upfront man you could always trust, the kind of person who meant what he said. If he said, I'm going to be there at 10 o'clock, you could set your watch by it. You could always count on getting the straight story from him. And he won the praise of Yahshua himself. His honesty, as a matter of fact, was so important to Yahshua, so important, that he made a special effort to point him out, point out a man who expressed this virtue in his life. How would you like to have such an endorsement from Yahshua himself? He did it again over in Mark chapter 10. Mark chapter 10 and verse 19. I want to look closely at these words that he chose, because it's very significant. He's talking to that rich young man. Actually, I don't know if he was rich. In verse 17, it says, when he was coming forth, or gone forth into the way, there came one running and kneeled to him and asked him, good master, what shall I do that I might inherit eternal life? And Yahshua said unto him, why callest thou me good? There is none good but one, that is Elohim. You know the commandments. Yahshua could, you know, look into his heart. He knew. You know the commandments. Do not commit adultery. Do not kill. Do not steal. Do not bear false witness. Defraud not. Honor your father and mother. Defraud not. Why did he say that? Why did he tell him not to do that? Mixed in with the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth commandments is this phrase, do not defraud. It's not specifically one of the commandments, but it certainly is taught in Yahweh's word. Defrauding, meaning an intentional falsehood in order to take advantage of another person. It's related to bearing false witness, isn't it? To do that, you must bear false witness, usually. And Yahshua classified it, along with murder and stealing, as something we should not be involved in. It's that very act of defrauding that Judas was going to use to capture Yahshua and put him to death. No wonder Yahshua had a very significant interest in that particular sin. Having true integrity means being totally honest and truthful in everything. The single most important quality, brethren, that you can develop, that you can ever develop, that will enhance every part of your life, is the value of integrity. By making the commitment to become a totally honest person, you will ensure happiness and success in life. Look at the prophets. They just exude this characteristic. You think of a prophet, you think of a man who's way up here, a man who would never lie to you, a man who would always tell the truth, would always be up front. Over in Exodus 8, we have an example of good and bad integrity. Exodus 8, when Moses was speaking to Pharaoh, and look at verse 28. And Pharaoh said, I will let you go, that you may sacrifice to Yahweh your Elohim in the wilderness. Only you shall not go very far away. Entreat for me. Moses had told him he wanted to go 3 days' journey into the wilderness to sacrifice to Yahweh. He says, I'll let you go, but you can't go too far. I'll determine the extent of how you're going to worship Yahweh, essentially is what he's saying. We see the same thing today when people say, I want to take off to the feast. They tell their boss, and the boss says, well, you know, I need you. Okay, I'll only go part-time then. So we have the boss determining their worship. Well, that's exactly what's happening here with Pharaoh. And Moses said, behold, I go out from you. I will entreat Yahweh that swarms of flies may depart from Pharaoh, from his servants, and from his people tomorrow. But let not Pharaoh deal deceitfully anymore in not letting the people go to sacrifice to Yahweh. Here we have an example of integrity and non-integrity. So Moses kept his word. He went out from Pharaoh and entreated Yahweh. And Yahweh kept his word. He did according to the word of Moses. And he removed the swarms of flies from Pharaoh, from his servants and from his people. There remained not one. How about Pharaoh's integrity? Well, he, verse 32, hardened his heart. And this time also neither would he let the people go. Integrity is the quality that locks in your values and causes you to live consistently with them. A person who has integrity also has an unblemished character in every area of his or her life. And you know, a key to integrity is keeping your promise. When you say you're going to do something, do it. Or don't say it. Keeping your promise. It's easy to make promises, but often very hard to keep them. So we have to be very careful when we go and, you know, express a promise to somebody to make sure that we can follow through. Every time you keep a promise, you perform an act of integrity, which in turn strengthens your character. As you act with integrity in everything you do, you'll find that every part of your life will improve. You'll be seen as someone people can trust, and that's very important. If you don't have that, what do you have? Like having a good reputation, to be seen as a promise keeper is a characteristic that leads not just to success in life, but, as we know, earns the favor of Yahweh. We learned about promises from our parents, at least we should have. When promises were kept, we learned the importance of obligations and commitment. We learned the importance of sincerity and reliability and trust and responsibility. And when promises were broken, we learned about disappointment. We learned about frustration. We learned about bad reputation. Somewhere in our journey to adulthood, the simplicity of making a promise and keeping it became a lot more complex, became a lot more difficult. Today, promises are more about getting something from somebody, more about winning affection or position or appeasing guilt. Promises have been sacrificed in the busy lives we live. People have learned to make and break promises to believe that's all okay. That's part of life. Everybody does it. People understand that. I don't really mean it. I'll make campaign promises. just to get elected. It's all part of life. My son is building. He calls on somebody to come out and do some work for him. Oh, yeah, I'll be there tomorrow. Tomorrow comes and goes, not there. Next week comes and goes, not there. Call him again. Oh, yeah, you're right on top of my list. I'll be there. Still waiting. Do we keep our promises? Over in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, Paul tells us to live honest lives. And it doesn't matter if everybody else doesn't. You do. You set the example. You're the one who's teaching by your life the word that you believe to the world. So you do it. No matter what the world does. And don't fall into the trap thinking, well, they understand. They know I really can't do it. If you say it, mean it. 2 Corinthians 8:21. Providing for honest things, not only in the sight of Yahweh, but also in the sight of men. That is a command, brethren, to be honest in the sight of the world. No matter what. No matter if it costs you and it doesn't cost anybody else. Do it. Do it. Recently, two researchers surveyed thousands of people around the world. They made 400 case studies, and they identified those characteristics most desired in a leader. And you know, in virtually every survey, honesty or integrity was identified more frequently than any other trait. Honesty and integrity. People still believe in it. They don't always show it, but they believe it, and they know when they see it. And you know, that stands to reason. If people are going to follow somebody, whether into battle or in business or ministry, they want the assurance that their leaders can be trusted. They want to know that he or she will keep their promise and follow through with the commitment. We can find many examples in Scripture of those who demonstrate integrity in a variety of situations. I mean, virtually the Old Testament is a litany of examples of both good and bad. Over in 1 Samuel chapter 12, Samuel was a man who just exuded integrity. I mean, if you think of a man who was the preeminent example of a guy you could trust, he's one of them. 1 Samuel chapter 12. This is at the end of his career, you might say, end of his life. Samuel said unto all Israel, "Behold, I have hearkened unto your voice in all that you said unto me, and I made a king over you." Yahweh said, don't make kings. They're just like the, you know, people of the world. They're going to turn back on you. You're going to regret it. Israel said, no, we want kings. We want Saul. And so he went ahead and he did it. And now behold, the king walks before you. He says, "I am old and gray-headed. And behold, my sons are with you. And I have walked before you from my childhood unto this day." He says, "Behold, here I am. Now," he says, "witness against me before Yahweh and before his anointed. Whose ox have I taken? Have I stolen from anybody? Or whose ass have I taken? Or whom have I defrauded? Whom have I oppressed? Or of whose hand have I received any bribe to blind my eyes therewith? And I will restore it. Let me know. I want to make things right. Tell me now, and I'll make it right. If I've taken from somebody, I'll restore. If I've done something wrong, I'll make it right." And they said, "You have not defrauded us, nor oppressed us, neither have you taken anything from any man's hand." And he said unto them, "Yahweh is witnessed against you, and his anointed is witness this day, that you have not found aught in my hand." And they answered, "He is my witness." After having led Israel for decades, Samuel promised to repay anything he had unjustly taken from anyone. What a promise. Can any of us say the same thing? Can any of us live up to that example? Even more impressive was the fact that nobody could find anything. Not one person rose up to make any claim against Samuel. His honesty, his personal integrity permeated every area of his life. He lived it. These two characteristics directed how he regarded his possessions, his business dealings, and his treatment of those who are weaker than himself as a leader. In our day, keeping promises and commitments have become optional. We often seem more concerned with convenience and performance. We give lip service to the importance of character, but we really don't believe it. At least we certainly don't live it. We have the idea that when things get tough, the rules can be changed and commitments can be discarded. We're shocked when someone comes through. The other day, I finally ordered a dumpster. You probably saw it out here. Called him up yesterday morning, and he said, okay, I'll deliver it either Monday or Tuesday. I said, that's fine, as long as it's not on the Sabbath. Got off early from work, came over here, 4 o'clock yesterday, here comes the truck with the dumpster. I couldn't believe it. You know, you remember things like that. Keep your word, or even be better than your word, and people will remember it. They'll remember it. They'll remember you as someone of integrity, of your word. Well, things have changed, people say. I can't pay you like I promised. Or, I know I said I'd help out, but something came up. Or, even worse, to make a lifelong vow to Yahweh, to be faithful to Him, and then in time drift back into your old former self, your old state of sin, because you lack the resolve. You know, that's as serious as it gets, brethren. Promises broken, promises gone amok. You know, when I hear of organizations, especially in the name, who baptize people without even counseling them, I get very upset. That's not just reprehensible. That's spiritual negligence of the highest order. To have the sacred responsibility of informing people and guiding them in the truth and what they need to do now to change their lives. Because it's a vow, it's an eternal promise to Yahweh. Without so much as explaining the serious nature of what they're about to undergo. The grave circumstances, should they ever renege on this vow, is about as serious an infraction as anyone in the ministry can commit before the eyes of Yahweh. It's when you made that commitment, that vow to Yahweh in baptism, you made it for the long haul, all the way out. There's no turning back. It's as serious as it gets. Do we realize what a vow means to Yahweh? When we tell Him we will do something, do we understand how critical it is that we fulfill that promise? Let's turn to Numbers chapter 30. We've got to kind of slough off this influence of the world and realize, hey, the Bible is a different book. It's not a book about the values and the ethics of today. It's a book about the values and ethics of Yahweh Himself. That one day will rule this universe and that will one day judge us. Numbers chapter 30, verse 1, Moses spake unto the heads of the tribes concerning the children of Israel, saying, this is the thing which Yahweh has commanded. If a man vow a vow unto Yahweh, or swear an oath to bind his soul, that's nephesh, that's his whole responsible person, with a bond, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth. Deuteronomy chapter 23. Do we understand how important a vow is? A promise to Yahweh? Well, we certainly will learn in His Word. Deuteronomy 23:21, when you shall vow a vow unto Yahweh your Elohim, you shall not slack to pay it. For Yahweh your Elohim will surely require it of you, and it would be sin in thee. It's a sin if you don't carry through. But if you shall forbear to vow, if you don't make a vow, and then you don't go through with it, it shall not be a sin in you. That which has gone out of your lips, you shall keep and perform. You shall keep it and perform it. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 1. Keep your foot When you go to the house of Elohim, and be more ready to hear than to give the sacrifice of fools, for they consider not that they do evil. Be not rash with your mouth. Ecclesiastes 5:2. Be not rash with your mouth, and let not your heart be hasty to utter anything before Yahweh. For Yahweh is in heaven, and you upon the earth. Therefore, let your words be few. What did Shakespeare say? It's the empty brass, the empty cymbal that makes the most noise. For a dream comes through the multitude of business, and a fool's voice is known by the multitude of words. When you avow a vow unto Yahweh, defer not to pay it, for he has no pleasure in fools. Pay that which you have vowed. Better it is that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay. Suffer not your mouth to cause your flesh to sin. Neither say before the angel that it was an error. Come up with excuses now. Oh, well, you know, the circumstances involved, I couldn't go through with it. I had this and that and this other obligation. I just couldn't do it. Forget it. It won't fly. Wherefore should Yahweh be angry at your voice and destroy the work of your hands? For in the multitude of dreams and many words, there are also many vanities, but fear Yahweh. Very clear, serious thing to make a promise to Yahweh and not go through with it. Over in Judges chapter 11, there's a man named Jephthah. Jephthah. He was apparently skilled in warfare because he was asked by the people to lead them in a battle against the Ammonites. In verse 30, he makes one of the strangest vows in the Bible. A foolish vow, I guess you'd have to say, but one probably directed and influenced by the fact that he had a zeal for Yahweh. And he somewhat overstepped his bounds here, to say the least. Jephthah vowed a vow unto Yahweh and said, if you shall, without fail, deliver the children of Ammon into my hands, then it shall be that whatsoever comes forth of the doors of my house to meet me, when I return in peace from the children of Ammon, shall surely be Yahweh's, and I will offer it up for a burnt offering. When I get back home, and whoever comes through, or whatever comes through that door, I'll offer it for a burnt offering. That was a vow that he made. Well, the Israelites were victorious. He heads back home after the victory. Verse 34. He came to Mizpah unto his house. And behold, his daughter came out to meet him with timbrels and with dances. And she was his only child. Beside her, he had neither son nor daughter. And it came to pass when he saw her that he rent his clothes and said, alas, my daughter, you have brought me very low, and you are one of them that trouble me, for I have opened my mouth unto Yahweh, and I cannot go back. And she said unto him, Father, if you have opened your mouth unto Yahweh, do to me according to that which has proceeded out of your mouth, for as much as Yahweh has taken vengeance for thee of thine enemies, even the children of Ammon. And she said unto her father, let this thing be done for me. Let me alone 2 months, that I may go up and down upon the mountains and bewail my virginity, I and my fellows. And he said, go. And he sent her away for 2 months. And she went with her companions and bewailed her virginity upon the mountains. And it came to pass at the end of 2 months that she returned unto her father, who did with her according to his vow, which he had vowed, and she knew no man. Now, the Companion Bible, and there is some discussion about this, Companion Bible said he did not offer her as a burnt offering, for Yahweh could not accept that. Therefore, Jephthah must have dedicated her to Yahweh by a perpetual virginity. Such a vow was provided for in Leviticus 27. And then he says, see note on verse 31 of this chapter here. I don't know about that, because it says that he did according to what he had vowed. He did what he according to what he had vowed. However, he took care of the situation. However it was done, he did what he told Yahweh he would do. He would give up his daughter in some form. When Yahweh makes a covenant, he can be trusted. Does anybody doubt that what he says will come to pass? Does anyone doubt that what Yahweh says, I will do such and such a thing, that he doesn't really mean it? Well, we certainly trust prophecy that way, don't we? We expect things to happen, and we see them happening just as they are happening. 1 Chronicles 16:15. Be mindful always of his covenant, the word which he commanded to 1,000 generations, even of the covenant which he made with Abraham and of his oath unto Isaac, and has confirmed the same to Jacob for a law and to Israel for an everlasting covenant. We can certainly agree with that. Psalm chapter 105. We see again where Yahweh is not one to shirk his word, but he keeps his word. 105 verse 8. He has remembered his covenant forever, the word which he commanded to 1,000 generations, which covenant he made with Abraham and his oath unto Isaac. You know, it always comes down to the issue of character. Not just words, but character. The words we speak must reflect the person we are. They go together. Biblical integrity is not just saying the right thing. It's not even a matter of just doing the right thing. It's also a matter of having the right heart and allowing the person you are on the inside to match the person you appear to be on the outside. This is how Yahweh is. This is how he expects his people to be. In Isaiah 6, when the prophet was given a glimpse of the kingdom, what happened? And how does this have to do with what we're talking about today? Well, in a way, let's see what it says. In the year that, Isaiah 6:1, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also Yahweh sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. He's in an inside of Yahweh in heaven. Above it stood the seraphims. Each one had 6 wings. With 2 he covered his face, and with 2 he covered his feet, and with 2 he did fly. And one cried unto another and said, Holy, holy, holy is Yahweh of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the posts of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and the house was filled with smoke. Then said I, Woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for my eyes have seen the King, Yahweh of hosts. Isaiah said, I am undone. I am torn apart, which is just the opposite of integrity. To have integrity is to be integrated. That's where that word comes from. To be whole, to be consistent. Isaiah finds himself just torn apart by what he sees and how he compares himself to the glory of Yahweh. And this forces him to realize his utter depravity in Yahweh's presence. Throughout the Bible, you know, man encounters Yahweh's presence in much the same way. And men are just humbled. When Peter realizes the power of Yahshua, remember in Luke 5 when they got that monstrous catch of fish? They couldn't catch fish. They tried all day long. I'm reminded of the fact we went out deep sea fishing one time. It always humors me. This huge ocean. You're sitting here in this boat, you know, and huge ocean. We were fishing for bluefish. You fish all night when you fish for bluefish, so that means you're sick all night. But anyway, we were fishing there, nothing happening. All of a sudden, someone at the back of the boat caught a fish, got a big one. Everybody at the front of the boat runs to the back of the boat. You're in this huge ocean, you know. It's got to be that spot right there where they're catching fish. Well, this is what's happening here. These people were fishing. Nothing's happening. They don't know what to do. I mean, they relied on fishing. This was their life. In verse 4, it says, "Now when we had left speaking, he said unto Simon, launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a draught. And Simon answered him and said unto him, Master, we've toiled all night and we've taken nothing. Nevertheless, at your word, I'll let down the net." He says, go ahead, throw it out that way. And so, all right, we'll do it. What have we got to lose? "And when they had done this, they enclosed a great multitude of fishes, and their net broke. And they beckoned unto their partners, which were in other ship, that they should come and help them. And they came and filled both ships, so that they began to sink. Then Simon Peter saw it. He fell down at Yahshua's knees, saying, Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Master. For he was astonished, and all that were with him, at the amount of fish which they had taken. He knew that was a miraculous thing. And he said, I'm nothing in your sight. Please, I just feel uncomfortable. Go away. I'm a sinful man. He knows that what just happened isn't natural. In fact, it's quite supernatural. This is not the way things work. But instead of saying, how did he do that? He says, get away. He's aware of Yahshua's power and his holiness and his own sinfulness in comparison. You know, it's a traumatic thing, and we see it all through the Bible, that an encounter with Yahweh's power and with Yahweh's majesty is traumatic. The holiness of Yahweh is a standard we can never measure up to. And this, in the presence of carnal flesh, is very much a shock. In John 18, a bunch of soldiers came to arrest Yahshua. A cohort is a tenth of a legion. Literally, 600 men. Now, it was probably, as the Companion Bible says, a number with some latitude. There may not have been quite that many, but there was a pretty big band of men. I mean, they wanted to make sure they got him because he was the biggest threat to the religious establishment that ever came along. And they didn't want Yahshua to get away. So a big band of soldiers comes to pick up Yahshua. Verse 3 of John 18, Judas then, having received a band of men and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, came thither with lanterns and torches and weapons. Yahshua, therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said unto them, who do you seek? And they said unto him, Yahshua of Nazareth. And Yahshua said unto them, Haya, I am he. He used the verbal root of Yahweh's very name. And as soon as he said that unto them, I am he, Yah, they went backward and fell to the ground. As many as 600 soldiers fall to the ground. And the word pipto that is used implies that they were frozen to the ground, unable to move. It appears as if the pronouncement of Yahweh's name, in that pronouncement, the veil of flesh perhaps was lifted, and that glory that Yahshua had was for an instant revealed to these people, and they went down. They went down. It overwhelmed them. The soldiers didn't arrest Yahshua. He arrested them. His power was just a gracious warning that they were in over their heads, and now they were more afraid than the one they came looking for. You know, Yahweh's holiness is truly awesome. And in a small part, we ourselves are to manifest that same righteousness by our integrity and the lives we live. Certainly, we could never match anything like him, but we can reveal a part of that. And that's what we're trying to do as his people, to live a life that he would live if he were here on this earth. Paul's in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 1. He says, walk according to your calling. Therefore, I beseech the prisoner of Yahweh, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation wherewith you are called, with all lowliness and meekness, with long suffering, forbearing one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. We're to express those qualities that we're trying to live for in our lives so that people can see the integrity of a worshiper of Yahweh. Are we doing it? We don't just represent him. We're called a part of his body. We're a part of him, in essence. And we walk as he walked. The quality that makes a leader, integrity. It means living by your moral code and your ethics. You know, you can have a high or a low ethic. Just depends. You can be moral or immoral. You can have that choice. But if you want to have integrity, you must choose an ethic that would please Yahweh and live it. A person can claim to be a believer and to live by a biblical standard and not measure up. He or she has committed to a certain morality. It may not be Yahweh's, but if you want integrity, you live according to Yahweh's word. The worst choice we can make is to be a hypocrite. Yahshua makes it clear. This is very serious business over in Luke chapter 6. I want to look at verse 46. Luke 6:46. When we find our actions not matching our mouth, we need to listen to Yahshua's words, and they should echo in our mind. In Luke chapter 6, verse 46. And why call you me master and do not the things which I say? Do not the things which I say. And yet you call me your master. You can't do it. You're a hypocrite. No one respects a person who talks a good game but fails to play by the rules. A person may forget 90% of what you say, you know, but they'll never forget what you do. They'll never forget it. They'll never forget how you live. The Bible tells us to train up a child in the way he should go, and when he gets old, he won't depart from it. How do you do that? Walk that way yourself. That's how you do it. Teach by example. That's what they're going to remember. And they will know that mom and dad aren't hypocrites. That's why Paul tells Timothy in 1 Timothy 4 to walk the talk. Don't just talk it, live it. 1 Timothy 4, verse 15. Meditate upon these things. Give yourself wholly to them, that your profiting may appear to all. Become an example. Become a light. Take heed unto yourself and unto the doctrine. Continue in them. Live them. For in doing this you shall both save yourself and them that hear you. Why? Because you've taught them, and they'll follow your example. You know, we're never going to attain perfection in this life. We never will. But there should be progress toward that. There should be evidence in your life that you're moving toward it. Two things Paul exhorts Timothy to watch. He says to watch your life and watch your teachings. In other words, give careful attention to your behavior and your belief. Make sure they match. Don't say one thing, do another. Have integrity that others can see and that others can learn from. That's the message I'd like to leave with you today, brethren. Yahweh hates lies. He hates a lack of integrity. Let's turn to Zechariah chapter 8 and verse 16. Yahweh won't abide a hypocrite. These are the things that you shall do. Speak ye every man the truth to his neighbor. Tell the truth always, no matter what. Even if it hurts, tell the truth. The truth will always be a salvation. You know, you tell a lie and you got to tell another lie to cover up that lie, another lie to cover up that lie. Just tell the truth. That's all. Execute the judgment of truth and peace in your gates. And he says, let none of you imagine evil in your hearts against his neighbor. And love no false oath. For all these are things that I hate, says Yahweh. That's what Yahweh hates. And these things lack a person, or lack in the life of a person who doesn't have integrity. Yahweh, in Psalm chapter 7, and verse 8, and I will close with this verse, says that Yahweh will judge your integrity. He will judge whether your life reflected what you said you stood for, what you said you believed, and you'll be judged by it. Psalm chapter 7, verse 8. Yahweh shall judge the people. Judge me, O Yahweh, according to my righteousness and according to mine integrity that is in me. Oh, let the wickedness of the wicked come to an end, but establish the just, for the righteous Yahweh tries the hearts and reigns. May Yahweh bless you.